Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to Insane in the Membrane, Edinburgh Edition.
Insane in the Membrane.
Our guest this week is the wonderful Jordan Brooks. A couple of years ago, I was in Edinburgh, and I did have my own show. I was up there. I was helping Jade with hers. So I was having a wander around and seeing some names that I'd never seen before. And I've been doing comedy a long time. And, you know, you think you get to a point, you think you work with everybody. And I kept seeing the name Jordan Brooks. Jordan Brooks was everywhere. And I'm like, okay, interesting. The poster was excellent. Saw the show. Absolutely blew my mind. He's a true one-off. There are many brilliant comedians in this comedy world, but there's a few of them that walk their own path. Jordan Brooks is one of those people that just dances to his own tune and is inspirational. So please welcome Mr. Jordan Brooks.
Previews there have gone, like, the worst previews I've ever had have been there.
Really?
It just feels like if you put one foot wrong, the whole thing is off.
Really?
And you're having to really work to regain their trust.
Like, yeah.
I remember doing one about this time last year, I was sharing it with Rob Carter, who was doing Christopher Bliss.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of the people there were there to see him, admittedly, and were friends of the cast, because it was a play that he was putting on, so there was,
okay,
like four or five people involved. And I went out there, and I, like, before getting to the stage, the applause just kind of stopped, so I just went, oh, I guess we're doing the comedy from here then. It's something that I say all the time.
Yeah.
If people don't applaud much, and I'm like, oh, fucking hell, all right, this is it? People would usually laugh, and they just went, oh. And then I struggled for like,
shit,
36 minutes. I didn't do a full hour, yeah. It was just fucking horrific.
It's funny when it goes like that, isn't it? When I just
one choice.
Yeah. I've had it before where you just, yeah. You just, I did it in Nottingham the other week, did Nottingham, and I walked out, I went, hey! And the whole room went,
nah.
Nah, mate. And I'm like, holy shit, this is the top of the gig. I've never had complete silence in a, especially in a, it's a normal club night.
Yeah.
And it, nothing, like not even a ripple of anything. Every single person in there just decided not to say anything. And you're like, whoa.
It's interesting when that happens, because I feel like there's got to be some sort of term for it, in terms of it being like a psychological thing,
yeah,
where the audience almost turn it into a game where they all collectively go, oh no, we're going to have some fun with not,
yeah,
but we're not going to give you what you want, and we're all playing that game now.
Yeah, and we've all decided subconsciously, even though we don't know each other,
we're going to play this role, we're going to make it really hard for you, and that's going to be the thing. And it's really frustrating. But I think if you're doing like a regular gig, it doesn't matter, because then you can acknowledge it, you can play with it, you can engage with it. But if you're doing a preview, you just want to do your show. You just want to try out some stuff, and they're not bringing the goodwill that I think you really need when you're trying new stuff out.
Yeah. How did you preview last year's show?
I didn't bleed. Yeah. So I did as many previews as I probably do generally, but I would just do. An hour's worth of what were essentially the first 20 minutes of the show,
okay,
before the twist. So it was an hour's worth of just
right,
aimless nothing. And then we tried the show as it was in Edinburgh twice before going to Edinburgh.
Really?
Yeah, we did two closed previews where we invited people to come and try out the thing. So when we got to Edinburgh, we had to build the show basically in the first week.
Wow.
The second half of the show had to be built.
Holy shit.
And
for people listening, it was a show where 20 minutes after...
Oh, wait, have we started? Is this it?
Yeah, this is it, mate.
I thought we were genuinely just connecting.
No, this is it, man.
Oh, you snake. You absolute snake.
We keep it like this and then we just ease in. Yeah.
Otherwise, wait, have you been recording since we met in the lobby?
No. Yeah. I just had a piss as well, recording that. It just keeps it nice and easy, rather because if you just go, right, okay, tell me about yourself, people tend to put on.
You're basically going, yeah. Can you shift the gears clunkily for us?
Yeah. Then this is. It just eases in, man.
Already in it.
Already in. Look at the way you're sat. You're chilled. This is how it's going to be.
Yeah. No, I mean, now I'm.
Now you're arsehole's now, yeah. Now we've ruined it. We've kicked the legs from under it now. But your show was so 20 minutes in, we were all given headphones due to things that were going on.
We thought
the show was it was outside noises.
So we faked this sort of noise bleed.
They were excellent because we all as one believed it.
Well, it was perfect in Edinburgh because the venue that we chose has a bit of natural noise bleed anyway. So we would sort of judge it on the night. If we did it on the weekend, it generally would be quiet, so it would be loud anyway in the courtyard.
Yeah.
So there would be this natural noise, and then we would just layer it with extra stuff. And then if it was a bit quiet, so say in the midweek, and there wasn't much noise bleed, we would obviously ramp it up in terms of the volume and the frequency of these, you know, interruptions. And then the idea was, things just got very intimate.
It did, didn't it? Should we be holding hands?
Yeah.
It's like this. Tell me.
Shit, man. I mean, I really should have done my research before coming on this podcast. I didn't realise that 10 minutes in things get real central.
I just knew you needed chilling out, man. But the lights have dimmed.
I think it must be a motion sensor, and obviously we're not moving around very much.
No, I see.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Makes you feel insignificant, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that's a damning appraisal of our conversation. Yeah. The room thinks that nothing is happening in this space. Nothing.
So why would I bother having energy here?
Yeah, the room's like, come on, get to the emotional revelatory stuff. We need some sucker punches, man.
Come on, liven up. So the noise bleed.
We sort of faked that, and then we'd also fake some like... Well, actually, when you saw it, that was, I think we put on an extra show and it was late. It was like midnight.
That's right, yeah.
And everything that could have gone wrong with the show did go wrong in an unplanned way.
Yeah.
But after that, I remember like you and some others were saying, I didn't know what was real and what wasn't real. And then based on that, I then worked in those similar fuck-ups and put them in the show when we took it to Soho and then eventually Melbourne Comedy Festival as well. So all the like the mic messing up and all that stuff, we worked all that stuff into the weave of it. So it sort of gave it more of a sense of like, it wasn't just the outside world trying to get in. It was stuff happening within the room that was also...
It was genuinely, because I was sat with Jade and a few others and we were laughing. Well, like because you were losing my shit. Absolutely, but you were jokingly saying, "If you don't sort this out, Daddy's going to lose his temper," and things like that. And we were like, "Oh, classic Brooks.
Daddy's going. Daddy's off."
That's it. and then we all got given headphones, and then we all thought we were. That's when the universe got tipped on its fucking head. When we were like, hold on a minute. We all thought it was just you doing your thing.
And then gradually
other things came in. And then it turned out, I don't want to ruin it.
That's all right. I'm not sure if I'm going to do the show again.
Okay.
But so, feel free
to And then it turned out there were three different groups of headphones. So the audience had different headphones on. And we were all listening to different things at the same time.
Yeah.
And it was phenomenal. When someone tried to push past me, excuse me, mate, and I genuinely... I went, oh, yeah, what?
And
And then afterwards, we're all coming out and going, that bit when that woman tried to get past me, and they were like, what bit was that? And I'm like, what do you mean? And then Jay was like, no, there was a bit where like, something... And I'm like... No, that never happened. And then we all suddenly went, the fuck has tricked us? It tricked us all.
Yeah.
That must have been, because it worked brilliantly, there must have been such a sense of achievement.
It was so amazing when audiences would go with it and sort of go along for the ride. I mean, not all audience members would. I think by and large, the show went down what, like every show had its merits and had its, you know, had its sort of its upswings, but when it flew, when the whole room was with it, it was like, yeah, it was it was incredible to watch people's reactions. Like, it was really fun. And it definitely became more fun as I did the show. So like when I took it to Soho, it was a lot more fun. And then eventually when it ended up at Melbourne Comedy Festival, which was only like a couple of months ago, it was in March, it felt suddenly very fresh again. And I was bringing a more of a joy to the performance. Right, it was more playful. And the audiences in Melbourne were so up for it, so responsive, so like, you know, they were almost like, it was almost like pantomime, you know. I'd sort of go, oh, today, guys, I'm feeling really sad, and they'd be like, no, oh, and I go, but not really, I'm really happy, and they'd be like, yeah, you know, they'd be so so immediately buy into the, you know, the ups and downs of it, and the, so it made it really fun.
Yeah.
But also I was so far removed at that point from the show in Edinburgh. Doing that was very stressful. It wasn't fun to do. I didn't enjoy doing the show.
That was your starting point. If you're building it at that point, then these things, I mean, just doing a stand-up show takes time to bed in, where you've got so many different dynamics with that show.
Yeah.
No, I'm not surprised. I'd see you in Edinburgh and you were like, hey, how you doing, man? Yeah.
Good. I'm just sprinting in to nowhere in particular. Bye.
I can't deal with this now, but I don't want to tell you, so I'm going to go.
Yeah.
There was a guy as well that came in. I think he'd gotten to the toilet before the headphones had been given out, I think.
Oh, my God. And then he came back when they were on.
When they were on, then you just went, good luck.
Good luck catching up with this one, mate. I'm not entirely sure what's going on, so no one is in control here.
What I loved, when I started in stand-up, I got into the sort of like the weekend clubs, like the Jonglers, the sort of that sort of circuit.
Yeah.
So you end up, you're sort of very closed in. You only know a certain amount of people and things like that. It wasn't until I started going to Edinburgh and that's when there was that year, not, it wasn't Bleed, it was, I think it was a year before.
Yeah.
When you got nominated.
Yes. And
that was, I'd never heard of you before. And then suddenly it was like, who's this? And then I saw your show and I'm like, oh, this is something, this is fantastic. Because you were in that kind of, I suppose what would now be seen as alternative clubs, you know, like the weird and the wonderful and the, you know. And I thought I was blown away. And in your show last year, it was art. It wasn't just comedy, it was a whole happening. And that must have been amazing to...
Yeah, it was. I wanted to do something that was a bit different from the previous year's show. Because I thought, I don't know if it was the right thing to do, really. Because I thought, well, people are going to expect something based on what they've heard about what my act is. And I thought I could just repeat the formula of body of work, which was the previous year's show. Or I could do something that I hadn't done before that was like challenging me. It was just an idea, like it was just the initial premise was what if the outside world was, you know, what if there was Nosebleed and what if I had to spend an hour grappling with that and engaging with that, and what did that represent? And because I was doing body of work the previous year in a Free Fringe venue initially before I moved to the Pleasant. So I was in a Free Fringe venue for the first half of it, but the Nosebleed was so extreme from the room next door, well, from the pub next door, that the show was almost couldn't be performed. I had to pull one of them because the noise was just too intrusive. So I remember doing this stuff where I was like, it wasn't like the most serious show. It explored serious stuff, but it was very flippant. I would hope it was quite sort of flippant and upbeat. But even then, in those quieter moments or in those more tense moments where I'd need the audience to be sitting in the silence with me, they just couldn't. It couldn't happen because of this constant chanting, and because it was a sports bar, so they would screen any modicum of sporting activity. They were putting it on, and they were projecting it onto a screen that was in front of the dividing wall between the pub and my room. So people were just chanting and screaming in the direction of my show. And I remember finding it really funny when I was sort of sat down trying to do a serious bit, and you could just hear people, like, you know, celebrating a goal. And I thought that's That's so funny that I'm trying to express myself. I'm trying to be this, you know, this sort of artist, and it's being sabotaged by a very aggressively indifferent world. And so I thought that's a funny starting premise for a show.
Yeah.
And then I met Breed Kirby from Fighting the Dog.
Yep.
Who I told the idea to, and she was like, "This is great. Here's some other stuff you could do." And then obviously the idea of headphones came up, and you know, she was very keen to sort of lean into the sound elements and really push what could be done in a live experience with that sort of tech. So that's how the show sort of came about.
Yeah, what a brilliant way of coming about, taking it from something that was quite. Because in we've all suffered that, and you just want to set fire to the fucking building with every prick next door. Especially as I don't like football, so it really annoys me.
Really rankles when you hear people.
When football encroaches on my life.
Yeah, particularly when people are more passionate about that than they will ever be about anything that I will say on stage. Like, it's just like I hear like the noise that it has a baritone to it that I will never feel in my direction.
And it was the show you were doing, like you say, body of work. It was very honest. Like you say, you were talking about serious issues.
Yeah.
But in a flippant way.
Yeah.
Did you set out to do that, or?
Yeah. Well, I always wanted to do. When I first started doing stand up, I sort of start. Yeah, as everyone does, they start doing what they think comedians do on stage, or they start by. Telling jokes in a certain way, following certain formulas, and probably most restrictively, trying to settle on what their persona is. Mm. And often you end up putting yourself in a sort of identikit thing that is actually quite limiting in the long term. So when I first started, I'd be like, well, you know, I'm the nervy, weirdo outsider guy who's like awkward in social situations or difficult around women or whatever. And I'd be doing like 10 minutes of this stuff, and in my head I'd be thinking, no, I'm not.
No.
I'm fine socially. I've got a girlfriend. Why am I lying? And so it came from that feeling of like, what am I trying to say? What do I want to do? And then, so I started thinking more about what I would do in an hour show, and the idea I had was I'd start trying to tell a story, but it'd be constantly derailed by neuroses or cyclical thinking. So the initial idea was, I'm trying to leave the house and I'm telling a story about how I go to leave the house, but I end up never leaving the house because I keep getting caught up in this sort of, you know, intrusive thoughts and repetitive thinking and ruminating on stuff. And so that's where I always had this idea that I was going to talk about it, but because it had been such a big and quite, you know, admittedly quite destructive part of my late adolescence and early 20s, I was very wary about doing it and exploring it, because the problem with sort of OCD stuff, there is no cure, there is no solution to it.
Right, okay.
All you sort of, the main sort of, it's just about finding coping mechanisms, and one of the coping mechanisms is kind of to ignore it. It's all you can do. So you just have to ride it out. And so if you have this impulse to like ruminate over loads of thoughts, or you have a weird thing, you just have to let it pass by.
Okay.
And so I was worried doing a show every day where I was talking about this stuff was gonna fuck me up and was gonna make it really difficult. And it did.
And I was right.
It really did.
But it was the first time I'd heard the term pure OCD.
Yeah.
Because I had, you know, obviously when you hear the term OCD, the same old things about, you know, you can't leave the house without switching the light on and off 20 times, and you keep telling yourself that the cooker's on and all that shit. But pure OCD,
yeah,
I'd never heard that before.
I mean, it's essentially the same thing, it's just internalized. So rather than switching the light switch on and off, or worrying about if you've left the gas on, you're worrying about if you touched someone inappropriately in 1993.
Really?
So you worry that you looked at someone in a way, or you just constantly worry.
Oh, okay.
And you can't let it go. You know, if you have a weird sort of thought that comes out of nowhere, you can't just dismiss it as many people do. You know, you've got this constant stream of nonsense, just all of us are streaming through us, and it's the difference really is like how much you're able to let that thought go. If you get a weird impulse or a weird thought, most people just be like, well, that's a strange thing to think, and then they move on with their day. But if people who experience intrusive thoughts or have difficulties with them, they will go, "What? Why did my brain conjure up that thought or that image? What does that say about me? Does that now redefine me?" And then your brain will look for all the evidence that that thing was always the case. So, you know, it could be, it's often like sexual or violent in nature because it's whatever sort of taboo that there is exists.
Yeah.
So, you know, like sexually, it could be sleeping with a family member or wanting to sleep with kids or animals or, you know, or to rape someone, to assault somebody. It's the worst possible things a human being could do.
And you can't.
Those other, and you can't, no matter how much you sort of go, yeah, but obviously I wouldn't do that.
Yes.
I haven't done that, and I wouldn't want to. Your brain would be like, yeah, but, you know, consider this. How do you know for sure that you don't want to do that thing? Because your brain thought it, so there must be a reason why, you know. And then you end up just getting caught in these sort of cycles that, in my sort of early 20s, were just exhausting. Yeah, I was exhausted. Couldn't stop thinking about it. Couldn't stop shutting
especially up. Especially then, when you think you're the only one, like you don't, because no one talks about these things. It's only now talking. I spoke to somebody else about intrusive thoughts, and I was saying like we all get it. And I've used this example many times before. It's like when someone gives you a baby, and you get this thought that goes, punt it over the shed, mate.
Yeah.
Boot this over the shed.
Yeah, just drop it on your, just lift your leg up and drop it, snap its back over your raised
push
thigh.
Push that soft bit in with your thumb on top of its head. But then you've got the other side of your brain that goes, that's ridiculous. That's not what we do with these. What we do with these is that we nurture them and we hug them. Yeah. We look after them. And then your animal sort of brain just goes, I still want to kick it. Yeah, I know you do, but that's not what we do. And this all happens in milliseconds.
Oh, it's not, it barely passes by. But
when you're younger and you have those thoughts, like you say, you'd be like, oh my God, I've just walked past that woman. I've just thought about pushing her in a bush.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I've had that. I've literally had that sort of thought, and then it would ruin days, weeks, months.
It's understanding that we do all have these weird thoughts, like you say, and it's not, it's just your brain, just because you see so many things, you see so many good things, bad things, horrific things, especially now with the internet. I mean, these images are rushing past us all the time, people are getting killed on trains and this and that,
yeah
so your brain's taking all that in, and then and it just like filters it all out across your head going, what about that, what about if you killed someone on a train,
what if you were capable of that? And there was so much unknown about ourselves, and there's so much, you know, we all have this sort of this doubt over what we are capable of as people and who we are, and so it's just exploiting that natural doubt that we all have and that uncertainty of self, and going, yeah, but maybe, and you go in, yeah, maybe, I don't know for sure, and not never quite being able to find the argument that convinces you to shut up and get on with your life.
You have to. Is it almost like meditative? Like you sort of come out of it and go, okay, here we go again.
Yeah, basically. Like, I mean, I've been, you know, I've had this for like, I mean, since I was a kid in a various form, but like it manifested itself, I would say, as what I would recognize as a mental illness in my early 20s. So I've had it for like 12 years.
Wow, man.
And, you know, it ebbs and flows.
Mm. Do you think it amplifies a bit when you're stressed, or is it just...
Yeah, it does. It really does. If I'm anxious, so like now is like the worst time for my mental health.
It's
between like sort of May to August. Once I'm in at the Edinburgh Fringe, it's fine. I've got a focus. I've got a purpose, and it's the stress of knowing that it's coming up. Mm. And it's the stress of having to work, and I find it very paralyzing. That's where my brain gets to work and really tries to, you know, sabotage.
Because I have that. I, you know, I'm the same. This has been my first year. Proper paid fringe, and the stress is so destructive.
Yeah,
and then you're like, but you're just doing something that you love.
Why? It's fun.
It's fun.
So much fun, and you can only get the only thing that should matter is improving as a performer, and that is the only thing also that's within your control.
Yeah,
how much effort you put in, how much you change things around, how much you constantly come back to that desire to develop and grow and get better. Those are the only things that matter. But unfortunately, if everyone else invests in the other side of it, the perhaps more careerist or political side of it, then you can't help but have your head turned in that direction. And it's a lot of management, isn't it? It's a lot of trying to just come back to the only thing that matters, which is you know, firstly your well-being, but also your development as an act.
Yeah, true. I think what I find is that we're going to Edinburgh, and so that costs a lot of money to go and do that. But on top of that, you've still got to maintain. You've still got to like pay for your flat where you live.
Yeah.
So you've got to pay for that.
Yeah.
And you've still got the bills that come out of your everyday life, and now you've got on top of it these other bills going, oh, by the way, you need to pay the grand by tomorrow. And you're like, oh,
shit.
By the way, when you've finished Edinburgh, you might not make any money. You're like, oh, shit. So,
it's awful. And it does take its toll. It does mount up, and it does make you question why you're doing it, and it puts pressure on people because they go, well, I'm investing so much money, so I've got to get something good out of this.
Yes.
I've got to get at least a good review, or you know, to get a nomination for an increasingly irrelevant award. Like, why are you allowing yourself to get invested in that? The reason is because it costs money.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the higher the risk, the greater the stakes, the more you're going to feel like you're owed something.
That's true. Very true. So I think, like you say, better off concentrating on the things you can control.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Rather than worrying about the everything around it. Yeah.
It's so hard. It's so difficult to,
of course it is,
to get out of that. But, yeah, really important.
Yeah. Since seeing your first show I saw, and you talking about, say, the pure OCD and what you were thinking, and you know, like, and we, you know, I know people have, like, we've know each other a bit now. Mm. You see jokes people have online, like on Twitter, that's, oh, you're sucking yourself off again, are you? Oh, you've been having sex with your nan again and all that. And you're like, yeah, but I've had that thought. I went to see my nan, and I've knocked on the door. I didn't hear, because she'd fallen over before and she'd been on the floor for ages. So I was knocking on the door, I didn't hear anything. I'm like, oh, shit. Maybe she's fallen over again. So I looked through the letterbox. As I looked through the letterbox, she came out of the bathroom, which was directly opposite the front door. But she obviously wasn't expecting visitors. So she's nude. And I'm like, she's like, hang on. And I was like, ah!
And so I'll not have seen that now.
Yeah, exactly.
That's in there. That's in there for
it. Yeah. And now, even talking to you now, I can see it.
Yeah. I wasn't even there when I can see it.
Yeah, sorry. I'm now putting this in your head. Oh, God, you all have sex with my nan. Shit. But there is that, when you're having those weird moments, and that as a flash of like, horrible. And then your brain goes, that's a naked woman. You have sex with a naked woman. My God, will you fucking stop it?
Yeah.
But then it goes away and then you're fine. But I imagine...
It varies, you know. I, like, obviously, in the last sort of, well, over a decade, I've definitely got better at managing it.
Yeah.
My experience of it has massively improved, and my quality of life has improved beyond in ways that I there was a time I would never have conceived of.
Really?
Yeah, I genuinely thought my life was over. I thought it was fucked. I thought I was in serious trouble. Like,
wow.
I was living at home. I didn't go to university. I was still I hadn't had sex. So I was like 24 when I lost my virginity.
Okay.
Everything just stalled. My entire life just stalled because of this, and I couldn't see a way out.
Did you have anyone to talk to? Did you talk to anyone about it, or?
Not for a long time.
No, because it was that weird.
I was very worried. You know, it manifested itself in the worst possible way. And so I went to the doctor. I didn't talk to my parents about it. And I went to the doctors and I was like, so there's this weird thing going on. And the doctors were like, yeah, sounds like stress, nothing to worry about.
Right.
And I'd come away being like, oh, sweet, that sounds like stress. And so for like an hour or two, I'd be like, oh, I feel like a normal person. And then slowly back it would come. And then, you know, so... it made my life very, very difficult.
You didn't think about doing anything extreme you didn't think about taking yourself off.
What?
Wasn't that about, like, you didn't think about
taking my own life.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, every
did you?
Yeah, of course. But eventually I did sort of, you know, I opened up to my mum and my dad about it, and they were obviously incredibly supportive and weren't worried for me, weren't sort of, you know, they didn't think they'd bred a monster or anything.
No.
And I went to a...
See, your dad punched himself in the neck.
Yeah, yeah. I was being like, damn you. So I went to see a therapist who was very reassuring, but they didn't seem to know enough about pure OCD.
Okay.
And it was only actually when I remember there was one night when I was just like, I was just so sick of it. I was so sick of it. And this was, I was at uni. I remember one night I was like, I was feeling so low. And I started to like Google symptoms of it. And I was like, surely there are other people who have experienced something similar.
Absolutely.
And what I found were these like message boards and forums dedicated to pure OCD and anxiety disorders where people were literally, I remember looking at this forum and there were the title of each thread was almost like a thought that I had had at some point in the last 10 years, where people were writing in block capital letters being like, I don't know how to live anymore, I can't live with this, this is ruining my life. And I was like, I remember like crying and laughing at the same time.
Because you just found
some relief. Yeah, that I was like, oh shit, this is, and the more I sort of investigated it, the more of a common experience I found it, discovered it to be, which obviously was so reassuring.
Oh man, even now you saying it, I feel euphoric.
Yeah.
Oh, you found a way.
Yeah, found a thing. And then once I started joining up the dots and working out what this was and learning more about it, it did help. It really did help. And then, but I also thought there's something about this that I feel like is so not discussed because of the often taboo nature of these intrusive thoughts.
Yeah.
People are frightened.
Of course
they are petrified about what this means. There are people out there who think they are psychopaths, who think they are sexual deviants, and they don't know who to turn to or where to turn. And I remember having a conversation with a friend of a friend, and I was describing pure OCD to him. This is before Body of Work. And I was describing the symptoms of it. And I'd always sort of suspected that he had something similar based on stories that I'd heard about him worrying about his health and stuff. I remember once I'd heard that he was really worried that he had testicular cancer to the point where he was like crying in front of his housemates and they all took him to A&E and stuff. And there was absolutely nothing wrong with him, but he was, you know, he would be so obsessed about his health. And so I was talking to him about it and I remember seeing him welling up.
Mm.
And he said, literally no one has put into words what I've experienced my whole life. And I was like, okay, well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And then I thought I should do this show.
Absolutely,
because it might actually, you know, it might help people.
You're listening to Insane in the Membrane's Edinburgh season. Scroll back through our past episodes from season one to hear from other comedians playing this year's Edinburgh Festival, including Phil Ellis, Simon Evans, Nick Revel, George Rigdon, Jen Brister, and Ishan Akbar. All those podcasts and this episode have Edinburgh show details within the podcast description. Expand the details section on your app and come and see us.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This show is made by Dark Horse Digital. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.
What's been like the most, like, I guess, heartwarming result of like talking about this stuff is the number of people who have contacted me personally and gone, thank you so much for talking about this because it really did help. And there are people that, yeah, who said like, you know, I'd never heard anyone say that out loud, what this thing was, and it's really helped me make sense of a lot of things that I've been worried about privately for
Fantastic.
My whole life.
And then that helps you as well. That still
helps me as well, because I go, yeah, obviously everyone experiences this, because we've all grown up in the same awful world. Like, why would my brain be the only one that had reacted oddly to the world around me?
Exactly that. I mean, producer Paul is very quiet. He doesn't chip in all the time, but sometimes he does. And he's been very quiet when we talk about murder. So that tells you, I think that tells
what's
us.
What's on your mind, Paul?
Yeah, what's on your mind, Paul?
What's been on your mind?
I take up your offer of staying with you in Edinburgh?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm going to be stressed, but you know, you need.
Hey, look, we all do crazy things out of stress, so look, whatever happens, happens, Paul.
Look, I'm not taking a shovel with me. I'm not saying there aren't any shovels in Edinburgh, though. Yeah, just saying.
Yeah, but it's an interesting conversation, because obviously, I've actually never heard this before.
Yeah.
And yet, I've always thought, I must be a bit nuts when I have a row with myself. Exactly what you're describing. Your brain goes off on one, thinking the worst possible thing. It's just to tell, I think my fucking brain's testing me. And I end up just calling myself a dick in my brain.
Like Sam Campbell said,
losing an argument with myself in my own head.
Telling myself
I'm a twat and then carrying on with it.
I was driving to a gig last week, and I got enraged in the car from an imagined argument. I have that all the time. I have imagined arguments with people all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm fuming. I'm like, what are you doing? Why are you, what? This person doesn't even know that they've pissed you off.
That's surely part of the learning process, though, is you have an experience, it didn't go as well as you planned, so you then reimagine the whole argument in your head. Should it ever happen next time around, you know what the fuck you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, you find that a lot with comedy, with like when I've emceed a lot and something's happened and I haven't dealt with it as I wanted to, or I haven't dealt with it well, but because of the nature of what we do, that situation will come up again. And when it does, you come out with this absolute zinger and everyone goes, genius, absolute genius. Yeah, that's been in my head for 5 years.
That was on my head for a 6-hour return journey from Coventry, having died on my ass. I've had a lot of time to prepare this.
I think that's the other thing as well, doing what we do when we have a tough gig, your own head on the way home. And it's always when you're far away.
Yeah, you got a megabus journey to really think about what a piece of shit you are for even daring to think that you could entertain someone for 15, 20 minutes, an hour.
Yeah. And then you're sitting on a coach surrounded by people with their stuff in bin bags.
Yeah.
Pay £4 to Coventry.
Prop comedian, is it? Go on your ass as well. Yeah, makes sense.
Right, a joke, mate. Yeah. Well, like you. Shut up.
Come up with a witty comeback like I just have.
3 hours after the gig's ended and the cunt's gone home thinking he's won.
Yeah.
Dickhead.
Yeah. It's true, and I think it comes down to it always comes down to like a desire for control. Like we want to control our own narrative. We want to control the world that we live in. And if we feel like we've been wronged in some way, or someone is perceiving us in a way that we don't agree with, we feel like we have to assert some control over that. And I think we do have an issue with accepting other people's narrative these days, because we are so able to tailor our experiences, particularly on social media. We're able to just block and cut out things that we don't like about the world around us. We have become kind of control freaks. And I think that has given birth to this widespread epidemic of intrusive thoughts, where we feel like our brains need to be clean, squeaky clean, and anything that we don't understand, we have to challenge. There's this also this like increasing desire for perfection, which is why like a lot of people with religious backgrounds end up experiencing intrusive thoughts because of this.
Because they put so much restrictions on themselves,
on their own thinking and what is and what the what is the what's the what the mind is allowed to explore and to think. So you want to, I mean, this is why, you know, OCD style perfectionism in terms of switching lights off or making sure that everything's straight and neat, I think is directly transferred to pure OCD, because it is in principle the same thing. You are trying to line everything up neatly and see everything neatly and understand everything neatly, which of course you can't do.
No.
But we now, as I say, we live in a world where we are expecting more of other people than we are of ourselves. We apply these impossible standards to people where we expect everything to be black and white, and we expect people to be either good or bad. And when we then turn that on ourselves, if we have these insane anxiety issues, we don't feel that.
No,
it's almost like we like because we don't have it in us, we can't achieve it in ourselves. We're going after other people.
Yeah, it's so true, man. In relationships, I mean, this has been said before. Michael Smiley touched on it in his episode when he was saying, like, we come to a relationship with expectations. Mm. And we're like, right, this is what I expect from this other person. Mm. This is what I expect from them in this relationship. Yeah. And if I don't get what I expect, then I'm not going to do anything that they expect.
Mm.
Because why should I?
I'm
fucking great. And I'm bringing my best. This person's lucky to be with me.
Yeah.
And shit like that goes on. Yeah. And then you don't realise that you're fucking it up.
You're fucking up crazily. And I'm probably responsible for the breakdown of every relationship.
Same. Yeah. Absolutely.
Partly because of my pure OCD makes me very difficult to be around. Not necessarily while I'm worrying about stuff. It's more about how it manifests itself in my like creative endeavors.
Right.
Like around about this time, I am a nightmare because I cannot. It's not that I'm being rude to people or, you know, I'm short-tempered or anything. It's that I'm so focused on that one thing, and not necessarily in a productive way where I'm like just working away at my show and being like, sorry, I can't go to the cinema because I'm working on my show.
Yeah.
It's because I don't want to do anything that is going to potentially distract me from work that I could be doing on the show.
Yeah, right.
I'm not even doing it. I'm just sat looking at the open Word document being like, well, at least I'm here.
Yeah.
At least I'm here and I'm waiting, you know?
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, it's not productive. And it's counterproductive. But I think it is also a manifestation of that obsessional quality of not being able to divide your attention equally or manage your time properly and being obsessed with one thing. This is my focus right now.
I'm the same, man. And then beat myself up when I haven't been sat in front of my Word document.
Yeah.
When I've just been on YouTube or I've been just laying... I find myself laying down... for hours.
Yeah.
I better do something in a minute. I'm like, shit, it's 3 o'clock already.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't get up till 12. what's the point in me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I have weeks of that sometimes. I go through long periods of just like really severe inactivity and just really hate, just a horrible cycle of hating myself and then wanting to treat myself, being like, well, maybe it's better if you know, maybe you just call it a night and you'll watch a film tonight, and then I wake up the next morning being like, why did I watch that film? You know, you can never find there is no thing that is going to satisfy you.
No,
make you
never.
Feel not like a piece of shit. And also it's so stupid to think that you can just if you think about something long and hard enough, that is the same as being productive with it. It just isn't.
No.
You can go and live a life and enjoy your life and divide your time, and actually you probably get more done if you go, here's a 3-hour slot where I'm going to think about nothing but this show, and then once I hit 3 o'clock, I'm going to go and watch Toy Story 4. But of course, it's hard to discipline in that way.
Yeah.
So therefore, it just sits right there.
And you're right. Yeah. Discipline is such a key word.
Yeah.
I find it so hard. Because we are basically in a privileged position where we're not accountable to anybody, really. You know, we get booked to do gigs. We have to go to the gig. We have to do the best that we can do at that gig.
Yeah.
But apart from that, you just got a day of... You write if you want to.
But also, like, no one's making you do it, you know?
No.
No one's going to be like, oh, fucking, what? Jordan Brooks has stopped doing comedy. Oh. Oh, no. Oh, no, he's no longer doing the hobby that he enjoys. Oh, what a shame. No one cares.
I said that the other day. I said, if I just stopped, it would take a while for me to go, I haven't seen Wilson for a while.
It's meant to be enjoyable. It's meant to be something that you enjoy. I always find it very funny when people will be like, well, if I don't get on 8 out of 10 Cats Does Countdown by October, I am quitting. You're like, quit then. No one is invested in your success. No one cares.
No.
So if you want that stuff, you go and get it.
Go and do it.
And if you don't want it, then enjoy what you are doing.
So true. I have many conversations with people where the other people have been saying that they're already talking about nominations and they're already talking about winning and they're always about it, and you're like, oh my God, what are you doing?
You're fucking yourself up.
Yeah.
Because you're investing in something that is so not related to what is important. Like it is just doing it is the thing. Doing it is it. You know, and I find that feeling is the most like strong when I'm in Edinburgh. And I'm like, this is it. This is all it is. Mm. I'm doing a show every day, and I'm enjoying it, and I'm developing, and that is the only yeah. thing that you can focus on. But I mean, I've been in Edinburgh like last year. I remember having a conversation with someone, and they weren't really paying attention because they were on their phone, and I looked at what they were looking at on their phone, and they were reading a review of themselves.
Oh no!
They were half listening, they were half present because they were fucking scrolling through some bullshit. And I felt physically unwell.
Yeah.
And I thought this is, but it's fucking people up. And it's not that these people are bad. It's not that people who are ambitious are like bad people. I just think it brings out the worst parts of people.
It does.
It makes you compete with one another. It makes you bitter. It makes you angry and frustrated because you have set your happiness, you have made your happiness dependent on a specific outcome.
Yep.
And you're like, I'm not going to rest until I get there. Well, then what happens if you don't get
That's
there?
Right, yeah.
You're going to feel sad. And if you invest in the good reviews, you know, I mean, this is almost a truism at this point, but like, if you invest in the good reviews, then the bad reviews are going to get you as well.
Yeah, true.
You can't invest in it either way because it will punish you.
And the other thing is what's really funny is that it's all like they talk about the Edinburgh bubble, and when you come out, you go back to normal life, and everyone's like, and they're like, you're all right. I went, oh yeah, I got this review by this publication, and they go, what's that?
Who's that?
Yeah, I've never heard of that. And what did they say about you?
Yeah.
Oh, I've never read that, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
is that good? Did you get? is two stars good? Or
how does it work? Is it one really good?
Number one, right? Number one.
It's Jason Wood, bless him, who's no longer with us, unfortunately. Yeah. And when he had a review, he got a one-star review, and he just put a star, Jason Wood. Excellent.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's it. You know, you can't worry. I mean, I just can't understand why people think like that. And they're, you know, I've spoken to people who've been like, oh, I got a 3 for my show, but that's okay because, you know, it's like it's my debut hour or whatever, and maybe, you know, next year hopefully we can aim for 4. And you're like, what are you talking about? What scale are you operating on here? This is crazy. You're going to send yourself insane by judging your success by an external, arbitrary, very political.
Yes, you should be worried about are the people in front of you that have paid money to see you, or have at least made the effort to come and see you, have they enjoyed it? Did you make them laugh? Because they're the ones that matter.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
What I like about you as well is that I find, and I'm not just kissing your ass. But yours are. Can we switch this off for a minute?
Can we dim the lights even further?
Fuck her up. Bring these shades down. Yeah. I find your comedy inspiring because it's you. You don't. It seems to be that you're doing comedy for you. Your comedy is what you want to do, and if people dig it, they dig it. But if they don't, they don't. You're doing what you love to do. You don't really pander to anybody, it seems. You sort of walk your own path comedically, which I find really inspiring. Whereas I worry about, I'm not so much now, but when I started, I was like, oh, like you were saying earlier, I've got to be a certain way because then that's what the industry requires.
Yeah.
Whereas you seem to be now going, look, this is what I do.
Yeah.
You're either on board or you're not.
Yeah.
Sort of like an Andy Kaufman kind of vibe.
Yeah. It's sort of a bit of a sort of room splitter.
Yeah.
But I also don't think my act is that, is like extremely alienating. Like I very rarely split a room equally. I mean, you know, by and large, people are on board. Mm. I don't know if that's just because over the years, people have like seen me several times or it's been recommended. So they sort of have an idea of what they're coming to. But I generally, like, I think I give the impression that I'm like this super alternative, divisive act. But actually, I don't think I am. I think most people can get on board with it.
Yeah. Oh, gotcha.
And I think it probably is because, like, I did a gig a few months ago, and someone came up to me and said, she said, it was just like how I joke around with my friends. Like, it's just how we joke around. And I thought, yeah, of course, that's exactly what it is. Yeah. It's just input. It's just play. It's just playing and doing silly voices and doing silly faces and rolling around and doing stupid. Like, people want that. People like that stuff because actually it is kind of how we communicate with each other, you know. And it is following It's just following those silly impulses that I think, by and large, we all have.
It's like this. It's like this podcast. Like, you know, we talk about quite serious subjects, but we have a laugh doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's a way of getting it across. You know, you don't have to be po-faced and...
You don't. And you don't have to have that moment where you go, okay, guys, look, I've been treating you like dicks for an hour because the truth is, when I'm depressed, I treat people like dicks. And everyone's like, there's the explanation. You know, you don't need it. You don't need that thing. Just play around with them, and you can have those serious moments, for sure. But I think you can definitely explore serious. Just make it funny. If the constant like aim is to make it funny, then I think by and large we'll like forgive you for exploring something a bit darker.
True. And doing it nearly naked, Jordan.
Yeah, big time.
Apart from your shorts.
Yeah.
More comfortable on stage.
Yeah. Exposed. Yeah. It's weird that like the more comfortable I am, the less comfortable the audience is. But I think it's a fair trade.
I think it's great. It's very brave. No shoes.
Nothing. Yeah, I've stopped doing that. Well, that was only really for that show. This year, I don't think I'm taking any of my clothes off.
Not yet.
I mean, it's only June, and I really don't have. I've got like half a show written. So the rest has got to. Maybe I can fill the rest with horror and outrage.
But still make it palatable, which is the trick.
Still make it accessible to mainstream audiences.
Oh mate, I'm glad you. We've hung out before, but not loads on. So. You know, when we were talking about you coming on here, and when I first heard about Pure OCD and all those, and I'm really pleased to hear that you've got a handle on it, because when I first started seeing the show and briefly talking about it with you, it sounded horrendous, and it sounded like your every waking moment was hell on earth.
Oh, I'd wake up every morning and it would be the first thing I'd think about. It'd be the last thing I think about at night. It'd be the thing that would keep me up at night. And it was just...
That's what he says, exhausting.
It's exhausting, and it ruined my quality of life, and it made me not want to be alive, like, to be frank, you know. Yeah. And even into my sort of, you know, the meds that I'm on have helped immeasurably.
And have you had different meds? Because I know you...
I tried a couple. I went on citalopram, which is the always the GP's go-to.
I think I got... That's the one I got.
And I've found... With me, it didn't help. And with a lot of people I've spoken to, it didn't really do anything.
Yeah, it just numbed me to everything.
Yeah,
I just felt like a fog.
Yeah, you don't want the fog. So I then got switched to fluoxetine, which is a Prozac, essentially Prozac. But that was after me researching and going to my GP and going, look, I've read about Pure OCD. I've read about intrusive thoughts and OCD broadly. This is what has been known to help people. And it did. I'm on a low dose, but it, as I say, just allows me to ride those waves a little bit more neatly. I still go through ups and downs. I still feel every emotion you can feel. Mm-hmm. I still run up and down the scale of emotion every day. But
that's good though. That's
exactly. Yeah. You want to feel something. You don't want the fog. So that all with all of that, I feel like I'm in a significantly better place.
Oh, so I'm so pleased. Yeah,
because it's oh man, it was horrible. I cannot overstate how because essentially, you know, it's challenging who you think you are as a person.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's because we all have the thoughts where like one side of your brain goes horrendous, and the other side of your brain goes yeah, but we don't do that, and it's all very fleeting. Whereas you've got that horrendousness. And you know what? You're going to carry this out.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
and that other side of your brain's going, yeah, probably.
Yeah, yeah, your brain's going, wait, I mean, he might have a point. Why would he bring it up? Yeah. Like, why would he do that? And you're like, oh, God, yeah, no, man, I guess you're right. Yeah, it's. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy.
No.
And some of my enemies are the worst.
It's that bad.
It's that bad.
No, listen,
yes.
You're a massive cunt. But
you don't deserve this, son. Yeah. Yeah. You don't deserve what's going up in here, mate.
Yeah, you're lucky. You just bullied me.
Oh man! But yeah, I'm in a much better place, and like it feels increasingly and rapidly like a part of my life that I've been able to leave behind.
Wonderful.
And, I feel in a great place.
I'm so pleased to hear that because you're a damn fine man.
Thanks.
And you make me laugh all the time. Your interactions online are really funny. when you were shaving your head.
Yeah.
For fuck's sake.
Yeah, I remember you called me a cannelloni bean. I remember that. Yeah.
Did I?
Yeah. I posted a picture of my shaved head and I was like, do you know what? I think I look sexy as fuck. And you, first comment, Colonel Rich Wilson, which is really nice. He's usually supportive. He'll say, cannelloni bean. All right, nothing else? All right, cheers, mate.
My online persona, the fucking tosspot. That's where it all goes, because everyone goes, you're such a nice guy online, mate.
Yeah.
I'll cunt you off to the cows.
I'll see you on Instagram, sucker.
You got some shit coming your way, bro. But this has been great, man.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming in. Thanks for having me, Rich.
Yeah, so you're all pumped for Edinburgh.
No. What's yours? You should mention what your show is and where it is.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's called I've Got Nothing. And
is it actually called that? I saw it online.
That's what it's called. Because at the time I was like, I really don't know what the show is. I knew that it was going to be about the end of the world and dealing with what. Essentially, I wanted an open playing field where I could just like mess around, throw in a lot of stuff. But in essence, the act was watching someone deal with the prospect of the end of the world.
Yeah,
what do you do in that time? What do? You frantically, you lose your mind a little bit. You prepare. You do push-ups for some reason. You delve into your childhood.
Yeah,
you think about all this stuff. So that's it really. It's a very loose premise, but it's at 9:30 at the Pleasance Beneath. And it runs every day from the I don't know, 30th? Are you doing the play? You're at the Pleasance?
No, I'm at the Gilded Balloon.
I don't know what day is the Pleasance run, but it's like end of July to end of August.
Yeah, so it's like the 31st of July or something, or 30th,
So the 26th or 27th of August, something like that.
That's it.
I was thrown out of the Pleasance last year for taking my own wine in.
Did you?
Well, it's terrible.
See, shit like this comes out. He sits there, he's all quiet.
Yeah, I wonder why he's been quiet.
I
thought I was being quite good, sort of sneaking out of the backpack into the glasses. And, try to explain to the guard.
I'm a Ghostbuster.
Your wine's appalling here.
Yeah.
I can get a much better bottle for £7 from Tesco's
next door. They chopped out the
show. But don't come back this season. So I'm hoping.
I'll see you right next year.
I did actually, but I had did I got thrown out once and then went back in and repeat offended.
You privileged prick. Your name or your face is probably on the wall now.
But I don't look like a criminal, do I? Yeah,
but this is it, isn't it? This is how you lot get away with it.
Just a wine criminal.
Posh criminals. Take it away with it with your bloody shirts. Wandering around. Yeah, you see, you're going sailing. I reckon you're going smuggling.
I'm going to take a camel back, I think, this time around.
Yeah.
Did you get chucked out of a show or just out of the courtyard?
No, just out of the courtyard.
Just out of the courtyard,
obviously you have to be in the courtyard to get into many of the shows.
I didn't realise they were that strict about policies like that.
But you gave it a good go. Did it twice.
Well, you're more than welcome at my show this year. I don't care.
Brilliant.
You can bring in as much alcohol as
you want. He'll have one of those hats and have a beer, but have two bottles of wine in it. Straws. Tally ho!
The can holders, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, we're just two bottles of Oyster Bay.
Mankind.
Yeah, and you'll be sat right in the middle. So all you can see is him. You invited me, Jordan. Yeah. Mate, this is a. Yeah. Thanks, man. Thanks for coming down.
Thanks for having me, man.
Great. Man.
I look forward to Edinburgh.
Yeah, lovely.
It should be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I'm really excited about it, actually.
Yeah.
My only stress ever in life is money. That's the only thing I stress about. I don't even want yachts and big cars. I just want to be able to pay my bills.
Mm.
And when I can't do that, that's what stresses me out. So at that moment, so promoters aren't paying me on time and money's gone out because of Edinburgh and you're just like, fuck you, man. Just, yeah. You know, I'm not being a dick, but...
Yeah, it's... Yeah, it's, and I think, I don't know if you found that this year the prices of accommodation has gone up.
Oh, dude, yeah.
Shut up.
$6,000, $7,000?
No.
Yeah, for some people. We were really lucky. Someone sent me a link on Gumtree. There's a lecturer for the university that needed someone to have her flat and look after her cats for the whole of Edinburgh, for the whole of August. £850.
Oh, my God, amazing.
Of course. I love cats. Do that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I've got to stay there till the end of August. That's the proviso.
Fair enough, though.
A 5 days holiday.
Oh man, you're saving so much money doing that. That's amazing. I think I'm paying. So I'm sharing a one bedroom flat with someone. So one of us will be in the living room, one of us will be in the bedroom.
Okay,
we might
swap
around.
I've done that before. Yeah.
£1,600 each.
Wow, man.
Yeah, and it's crazy, and I don't understand why it is, because it's not like. It's not like the money is going back into the city. Do you know what I mean? It's not like it's not the council. It's not that the money is being reinvested into Edinburgh. It's just going into private landlords' pockets.
Yeah, exactly that.
So all you're doing is just pricing people out.
Yeah,
and making it a very exclusionary arts festival.
Well, we were looking at properties, and they were between $5,000 and $7,000, and you're just going, how?
Yeah,
you know, it'll get to the point where. You just can't afford to go and do it.
No. I think I won't do it. I think next year will be. Mm. I mean, I've done. This will be my fifth year in a row, and I think it's one too many already. Like, I'm already struggling to think of shit to say.
I bumped into Stephen Bailey the other day, and I've also spoken to Sean McLaughlin.
Yeah,
and they're not doing Edinburgh. Stephen Bailey looked radiant.
Oh,
the other day.
He does. Yeah.
He looked astonishingly good because he's not doing Edinburgh, and he was gloating. He goes, "I'm going to Portugal." Like, you're a cunt. He looked amazing. Whereas the rest of us is just walking around like Edvard Munch, the scream. Oh God, what have I done?
We're not even there yet. It's not even happening yet.
I remember a couple of years ago going up. It was my first time taking a show up on the Free Fringe. I got off the train and I was met by Eddie Brimson, and he was like, we'll take you to the accommodation. And as I dragged my bag and just saw all the massive posters of everybody
first sight.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh no.
Here we go.
I haven't even written a show really. What have I done? My arsehole just fell out.
Yeah, I'll always have a panic attack that first couple of nights when I'm walking, say, through the meadows, and I'll look at this long strip of huge posters and be like, I can't believe a year has passed with such little personal development.
Yeah, I know.
I can't believe I failed to do all the things that I said to myself this time last year that I was going to do to improve my quality of life and make me feel better.
I know. I was going to run home from Scotland last year. I know. And then the lists come out.
Yeah.
These are the shows you need to see, and these are the essential comics this year, the exciting newcomers, and this, and if you allow yourself to get to buy, if you let that get to you, you're going to have such a shit time.
Yeah, and it's just remembering that it's all bollocks. No one really has a clue what they're doing. No. Least of all journalists and critics who are always viewing it from the outside, whose job it is to increasingly to generate clicks on those articles. So the people that they choose, it's not always. I mean, you know. I think it's a falsehood to say that comedy is a meritocracy. I think it's a partial compromise meritocracy. But so when you look at lists of like essential acts to see, it's motivated by things and conditions and stuff going on that you can't even understand really.
And no disrespect to anyone.
No,
on the
of
list,
course not. And good for them. And I'm always pleased to see when people are doing well. And I always celebrate my peers' successes. And
of course,
bar like one or two cunts.
Yeah, there's a couple of you go, fuck off.
There's a couple I'm like, why do people keep liking them? No, not really. I genuinely don't have any sort of enemies or anything in the industry. I, there's no one that I dislike. I find it very hard to dislike people because you're sort of like, well, if you've experienced life, if you've had any of the difficulties that I have had or people around me have had, then you're just trying your best. Yeah. You're just trying to be the best version of yourself, and that's a bumpy road. And as long as your intentions are always good, then
that's so true. I was saying this the other day. Someone was just saying, we have a car ride and the comics get in the car and go, right, who are we going to slag off? Mm. And they go,
I'd rather
everyone,
not.
Everyone's all right, actually.
They're just trying their hardest.
Everyone's got their own foibles and their own bits. And yeah, you might have had an off night with them. And I've had off nights with people, but then I see them again and I'm like, no, they're fine. And they'll probably say the same with me.
Oh, 100%. You know? Yeah, I think it's very juvenile. I'm always surprised when I meet adults who say, I've got a list of enemies, or I've got a nemesis, and you're like, where? What are you? How old are you? What do you mean?
What are you, Batman?
It's like, yeah, exactly. Is that what you're saying? It's such an obtuse way of telling me that you're Batman. Just tell me you're Batman.
Yeah, let me have a look at the suit. Yeah. Fucking about. Where did you get those incredible toys?
Don't give me a list with like names like Joker and Scarecrow on it and leave me to figure it out for myself.
When you look at those films now with an adult look, you go, it's just the grown-ups running around in
it's
costumes.
So stupid. It's
Why
so
would
stupid.
You do that?
The shit that people think we like, and they are correct.
Oh, I'd love to be Batman. But it's like watching the original Superman and things like that, and you go, he came from another planet, and that's how he thought we'd all appreciate him in his lycra.
Yeah.
All right, mate.
This is how you chose to present yourself. So an alien planet, essentially.
Sure. You wouldn't go to a party that you didn't know anyone. You wouldn't go dressed as a cunt, would you? You'd want to blend in a shade.
Yeah, do you know what I think the best first impression would be? To have my ball sack on display through my clothing.
And for everyone to go, your underwear's on the outside, you dickhead. That's how we do it on my planet.
Yeah.
What is it, Planet Primark, you fucking asshole. Oh man. Oh, I love it. I do love a superhero film though.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it is nonsense.
Oh, it's absolutely garbage, but I love it. I lap it up like the best of them.
It's delicious. Yeah. Mm.
It's just dumb spectacle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you had a power, do you think what would you have?
I would have the ability to make people shit themselves by looking at them.
So I'd be a bass player.
Yeah.
That one note. The brown note.
Yeah. Which actually we did play in Bleed.
Really?
So we played the brown note during a bit where I don't know if you remember, I like turn into a god king and my voice changes and I'm just like stomping around and shouting at people. We play a brown note underneath it. To make people feel physically uncomfortable. And I only found out this recently. I'd kind of forgotten that we'd thrown it in. And then I met someone who said they'd sent their mum to come and watch the show. And she said afterwards, look, I really enjoyed it, but honestly, it made me shit. Like I had to run to the toilet to stop me shitting myself afterwards. I can't believe that the show instigated a bowel movement.
You made a woman shit herself.
You made a woman almost shit her pants.
Oh God, I'm not coming to see you this year. Because you're putting things in. You don't even remember what's in the show.
I've no idea.
I just sit there and I just start coming. Yeah. Like, oh, this is odd. What the
Oh, really? We played the white note. I didn't realise. We played the ivory note.
That was the show. Loved it. I've been up in every day.
Loved it. Came three times. It's great.
I'm exhausted though, I need some water.
That's the review you want then.
Yeah. Yeah, three cums. Three cums out of five.
Little splash emojis.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. With what's the purple one?
The aubergine.
The aubergine in the water.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my favourite.
Yeah.
I look forward to seeing the show.
Can't wait. I look forward to seeing yours as well. Yeah. We're not at the same time though, are we?
No, I'm at 4:30 in the wee room.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, man. That's going to be good. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's going to be real fun.
Someone was saying the other day, because I did do a preview and there was a bit that they went, I've heard that before. I'm like, are you insane? I'm not writing a completely new show. Mm. No one's seen me. You know?
No, I throw in stuff all the time. Yeah. You know, I mean, I'm raking over the same bullshit, the same ideas, you know, like things like intrusive thoughts are like, so like it was quite a prominent thread in body of work, but it will always be part of my act. It will always be part of the weave of my act. So yeah, that stuff will always recur.
Yeah.
And it does feel like I'm repeating myself, but I'm also like, well, this is just my act.
That's
like,
what we do.
I like to talk about these particular subjects.
Yeah.
It might seem like I'm raking over old ground, but tough shit.
Tough shit.
Tough
what about
shit,
you.
That's what I like to talk about.
Yeah, so, same.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming down, man.
Thanks for having me.
Great. Yes. Insane in the membrane.
Thank you, Jordan Brooks, for coming down to Comedy Central and having a chat to us. Thanks again to Comedy Central as well for giving us the space to do so. You'll find ticket details for Jordan's Edinburgh show in the podcast description in your app, along with tickets to my own show, Rich Wilson, Death Becomes Him, and also our next Insane in the Membrane live show. The Edinburgh season continues next time with Leo Kearse. Until then, bye-bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.